Hi guys, welcome back to the 15th episode of a podcast because nobody asked for it. I'm joined today by one of my favorite Verado Coffee Company customers.
That'd be me.
And Border Patrol agent,
yes.
Vernon Kemper. Vernon, yes. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Before we get into conversation, I want to do a quick disclaimer that you work for the government, Border Patrol agent.
Yes.
This isn't going to be like a political, my intentions are that my views and stuff like that aren't really spilled into this.
Understood.
Yeah. But we see so much about on the news about what's going on at the border. This is the biggest story in the United States right now.
Yes, it is.
There's a national emergency regarding this. I wanted to have you on, and you laugh. And I wanted to have you on because this is your life. You're there every single day.
Yes.
And I thought it'd just be neat to talk about what you see every day and stuff along those lines. So you're a Border Patrol agent.
Yes.
What does a regular day at work look like for you?
Regular day at work. Well, you come in. We have something called muster, which is basically like a pre-shift where all the agents on duty that night. We go in the room. Supervisors will let you know where everybody's assigned for that evening. Anything that happened before our shift came on, anything prevalent that we need to know, like this is going on. If you're in these areas, this went on. And then you go out to your assigned area and, you drive the border road, look for any kind of traffic patterns or what we call traffic patterns, just people crossing, footprints, stuff like that. If you find something, you call for other agents to help you out. We have air support. We have technology positions, which cameras and drones and all that stuff to help you find where the people are. And you go out in the desert, chase them down, get them, bring them back to the station.
It's like a movie.
It is like a movie.
How long have you been working there?
9 years.
9 years?
9 years.
Wow, I actually did not know that. So I think a lot of people don't understand, like if you're listening to this, I have family in Michigan. So if you're listening to this or elsewhere, we don't live near the border at all.
No.
So you drive a little ways.
I drive a little ways, man. We're talking 97 miles, so about an hour and a half one way. So 3 hours round trip, 5 days a week.
5 days a week. It's not Monday to Friday. It's
Whatever day. Your days off is based on your seniority, how long you've been in the Border Patrol. So obviously, if you're a little bit more senior, you'll get the days off that you want. Mondays off, or Sunday, Monday. Like Sunday, Mondays off, so... No, it's not Monday through Friday. It's a 24/7, 365 thing.
Okay. What do you do on your drives? How do you pass the time?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, SiriusXM. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you, SiriusXM. A lot of, the Fight Nation. I'm a big WWE guy, so there's a show called Busted Open, so I listen to that on the way there, and pretty much if I missed anything on the way back, and it's just after that, it's just channel surfing, trying to find something so you don't go crazy.
Do you ever like fall asleep? Doze off?
I guess I can't admit that. Yeah. I have dozed off a couple times.
It makes my 30-minute commute to school, it puts it to shame, and I feel embarrassed for being like, oh, I got to drive to school.
It's bad. I'll come in at noon or whatever and get coffee. I'm like, what time are you going to be work? I'm like, 2 o'clock.
Yeah,
that's usually a typical day.
Right.
And the drive.
Right. So our president declared a national emergency last week.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change your day-to-day at work?
No.
Nothing changes at all?
No, not at all.
Really? That's actually surprising to me.
Not at all. This emergency, he claims, I don't see it. I can't speak for, all the other 19,999 Border Patrol agents across the United States, but on the southern border, as for where we work, I don't see what he's talking about. The stories of women with tape on their mouths and back of vans, I've never seen anything like that. So I don't know where this emergency is coming from, and I'm pretty sure most of the guys I work with share that same view. We don't see any kind of emergency.
Would you say people who are conservative, like that you work with, you say that those guys don't share those viewpoints that there is a national emergency? It's confusing. If you're a conservative at the border and he declares a national emergency, are you on board with it, or are you saying where? I don't see this.
I'm just saying where.
Right.
I don't understand it. Now, as the big uptick in people from Central America showing up, yes, Is that causing an emergency? No, because they're not trying to evade detection. They're not trying to avoid being apprehended. They walk, they cross the border, stand on the border road, and wait for us to come pick them up, and then they claim asylum or credible fear. That's not an emergency, you know. But and that's not, excuse me, that's not the stuff he's talking about. He's talking about there's crime, there's drugs pouring across the border, and it's like,
what was it? Build the wall, crime will fall.
Build the wall, crime will fall. And you're not even following your own government agencies, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, even CBP, our organization, Customs Border Protection. The numbers don't support anything he's saying because they're like 90% of the drugs that are seized are coming through legal means via the port of entry. That's fact. This isn't nothing I'm making up.
Right.
These are all researchable facts. That's true. I see it because we work with our port guys at our local port of entry. I see it. It's not coming through the desert. Even the days of marijuana seizures of thousands and thousands of pounds, that's pretty much dried up because of the legalization of marijuana in different states, especially like Arizona and Colorado. The street demand isn't there for it anymore. So the cartels are trying to find different means. It's more of a high value, less risk.
Yeah.
I mean, when you hire 10, 12 guys to carry a bundle of 45 pounds on their back, you automatically got to figure in loss. I mean, that's just economics. If they make it, if they don't make it. I mean, you're talking the more hard narcotics, fentanyl and all that, black tar heroin and all that stuff. That risk is greater, but the chances of you getting apprehended are less. You know what I'm saying? If you can go through the port of entry, hidden in your car somewhere. So you're not going to find guys walking in the desert, seven guys with backpacks full of fentanyl. That's absurd.
They're a little smarter than that. They're a little bit imagine. Smarter than that.
That's completely absurd. Because you're talking a huge risk. You're talking millions of dollars in meth and heroin and all that you're going to risk getting caught. They're going to get caught. To make it from where they go to where they try to get to, we're talking 60 miles. So you're talking that trip is going to take roughly 10 to 12 days, maybe 15 days. And you think you're going to make it that far without somehow getting chased at some point by somebody? Bad guys aren't stupid. So yeah. That's not true.
We have, and like I said, a president and for the most part, a Republican Party who is heavily pushing for a wall to be built and a Democratic Party who is heavily opposing this wall.
Correct.
Have these comments and this divisiveness, has that spilled into your workplace, like with coworkers or anything like that? Because I feel like that can get a little tense and awkward.
It can. When you work for the government, there's something called the Hatch Act where you're not allowed to disclose any kind of political feelings or sway one way or another
right.
while on duty. So you're in a government building, government vehicles, you're not allowed to discuss any type of politics. But I mean, we're out in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of boring, especially right. if you're at one of our checkpoints. There's five, six guys, you're sitting there, and there's no cars coming through. Of course, these topics come up. You're not supposed to talk about, but we talk about things like that. So it has caused a big rift and a divide amongst workers. You know, well, I believe this, and the other guy's like, I don't believe that. And it's usually playful. It's not gotten real serious where, like, friendships have been lost over it. But right. these conversations do come up, yeah.
Which is very interesting.
It's very interesting.
Because, like you said, in your 9 years, I would guess that's never happened before.
No, it's never happened before. Never, never. I mean, it's happened during the Obama presidency. And most of that stuff was, well, you know, he can't do this, he can't do that. Who does he think he is? One of the biggest things I'll never forget was a big problem that we like got into it about was the day he did the press conference in the remember that
in the tan suit.
And yeah. Oh my goodness, my God, you can't do that. How unpresidential. He shows up in a tan suit. So I'm now like, excuse me, don't you wish you had those days of the tan suit conversation? And then, you know, they'll start laughing. I'm like, that was the biggest deal you had with him was his tan suit. And then Michelle had a dress that didn't have sleeves. That was a big issue.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, these issues are a little bit more important
right.
because, you know, it's starting to affect everybody from, you know, high up all the way down to the lowest worker. These issues and policies he's putting in place is kind of messing with everybody. So
you talk about being affected. You were in you guys down there were incredibly affected during the shutdown.
Oh.
So what do you remember? Because that was,
oh,
it was what, 30 days?
35 days.
35 days.
35 days, yeah.
What do you remember from going to work but not getting paid to work?
I mean, just, it was common sense. Anything you've seen on news, and yes, it did affect the way you did your job. I mean, because you're at work, but half of your brain is thinking, man, if, you know, the water company or electric company doesn't call me back,
right,
to take my extension offer, what am I going to do? Oh, man, I just forgot car payments coming up. Man, I hope my animals don't get sick. And then meanwhile, a car pulls up. Hi, how you doing today, folks? Good. Everybody U.S. citizens? All right, good. Have a day. Good day. They drive off, and you're back to, shoot. Oh,
right.
Man, I forgot my credit card bills. And how am I going to get to work tomorrow? Yeah, I mean, it definitely messed with your morale and in your way of thinking. And in our job, you really need to pay attention because you're out in the middle of nowhere. It's not like any kind of state or local or county police department where, yeah, I can call backup. It'll be here, you know, 5-10 minutes. My backup's probably an hour, hour and a half away. So you need to have a clear mind and focus on what you're doing. You're out in the middle of the desert. We're probably one of the only law enforcement agencies where you'll get one guy or go after a group of 10 people. Even my friends back home that are law enforcement, they're like, man, you guys are crazy. I couldn't imagine wrestling a group of 10 people by myself. So you factor that in, and then you're thinking about bills.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous cocktail, man. Very, yeah, dangerous cocktail.
And I remember what you were saying, too, is political viewpoints at that point, mm-hmm, when you haven't gotten paid in 2-3 weeks, mm-hmm, thrown out the window.
Completely thrown out the window.
There are now, it's people's livelihoods now that are exactly, kind of been at stake.
Exactly. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
At that point, you're not, your political views are gone because you're just like, I kind of just want to get paid. You know, the first couple weeks, guys were kind of sticking to their guns who are more conservative and right-leaning. They're like, oh, this is, I believe him. I'm behind him. I think it's great. And, you know, 3 weeks come along, 4 weeks come along, and they're like, man, I don't care what he does at this point. We just, right, need to get paid because this, right, is getting ridiculous. So, yeah, at that point, man, there's no political affiliation or or, right, belief at that point.
Did anybody not go to work because of, like, look, because I remember you were at a point where you were saying, yeah, I can't go to work.
Yes, it did suck because we were essential personnel, obviously, law enforcement. So,
right,
we have to go to work, but you have to look at it realistically. Like, I can't afford to spend money and I'm not making any money.
Mm-hmm.
It's $30 a day for me to drive back and forth.
Right.
Basic math, $150 a week, $300 every pay period,
mm-hmm,
$600 a month. Now, how am I supposed to come up with $150 to drive back and forth to work when we're not going to get paid? So, I mean, it went from I tried to go every day to every couple of days. And by the end of it, I could only muster up maybe 2 days out of the week to try to get to work. And, you know, it's something that you really wanted to do. It's an important job. I'm not like I'm sitting at home like, I don't care. I'm like,
right,
yeah, I really did want to go to work. I just couldn't afford to do it.
Yeah.
There was no way to do it.
That's just insane.
Yes, it is.
So you talk about the other day, 342 immigrants,
yes,
came to your port of entry.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to bring this up because this is like insight into what you do every day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind sharing that story?
No, not at all. Our area is 63.8 linear miles east to west. So it's a huge area.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking 63 miles linear and then 60 to 80 miles inland. So, I mean, that's a vast area for roughly about 400 agents. That's a huge area.
Mm-hmm.
So these the Central Americans, when they first started showing up, they would go to Tijuana and then try to get into San Diego. But, you know, the news showed you that stuff that went on, tear gassing, all that. So then they started to push a little bit more east, which would be Yuma and Mexicali. Their line is what we call the line, the border, is fortified with agents and stuff like that. And they were like, well, we'll push even further east. And that pushes into our area. So, yeah, there's a Mexican highway that runs parallel with the international boundary. And bus pulls up and Next thing you know, these people just start pouring out.
So you saw 342 people.
We have technology positions that are out. And, I seen it from the footage that they got from the technology position, and it was just crazy. You see this bus pull up, and these people come out, and they just, they stand there and wait for us to come get them.
So I know if you're listening to this right now, and like my first question was, what do you do at that point?
What do you do? That's crazy.
Because now this is your job.
Yeah. So now what happens is the guy, called, hey, I got a group. We hear it all the time. You got a group? Okay. How many? Dude, I don't know. It's a lot. He's like, okay, so 100 maybe, They started showing up in groups of 70, then it was 100, then 200, then 250. We're like, okay, well, how many? He's like, I can't count. There's too many on camera.
Whoa.
And we're like, okay, who's the guy in the truck? He must be a real junior guy. He doesn't know.
Yeah.
So, helicopter goes to go first just to kind of see, because obviously it's going to get there before we get there in trucks. And the helicopter pilot was like, yeah, it's big. And we're like, well, how big is big? And he's like, it's a couple hundred. I was like, no way. So we go down there and, almost got a final count. It's 342 Central Americans. Mixed, mostly Guatemalan. There's a mix of a little bit of Hondurans and El Salvadorians in there, but it was mostly Guatemalans. So it's a big group.
and so when they show up, what is their intention, obviously, is to get into the country?
Yeah, they're going to claim credible fear or and seek asylum, yeah.
Okay, and then you place them in, how does that work?
All right, so you go down there, we get a count of how many people are there. You do a quick filled interview sheet of just biographical information, all that stuff. Then they have to transport them to the station somehow. So from where they were to the station is probably about 45 minutes to an hour. Once we get them to the station, screen everybody in. Then we do a medical screening. Contrary to what you heard on the news, those people are dying and they're denied medical care. That's completely false. That is completely false. On the back of the sheet, there's medical questions. You ask these medical questions. Are you sick? Are you taking any medications? Do you have any allergies? Have you thought about hurting or killing yourself? Do you use drugs? Are you pregnant? That they answer. I'm just asking a question. Are you sick? Do you have a headache? Do you have a cough? So these answers come from them. It's not that we generate. It comes from them. Once we weed out who needs to go to the hospital, because if they need to go to the hospital, even for a cough, law says they have to. We have to provide medical care, period. So those who have to go, they go. The rest will come inside, finish the processing. They're fed. They get a chance to clean up. Rest and all that stuff. Then a bus will come and take them from our place to Tucson. And from Tucson, they're transferred over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, their custody. Mm-hmm. So that's how it works. Not what you see on TV. That's not true.
So where does it get a little misconstrued then on TV? At what point does it kind of veer off from what actually happens?
It's just you're not telling full truth. That's pretty much... It's more
how pushing an agenda.
It's more sexy to say,
right,
this person got sick or he died or whatever. But okay, we'll use example the little boy who passed away in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they apprehended a group. They were en route to the station. Little boy had a seizure. Right, so they stopped, and they had EMTs. Some of our agents are EMTs. Examine him, whatever. Take a look at him, and they were like, okay, well, I think he's good to make it for the rest of the trip to the station. They continued on. He had another seizure. Immediately called for air ambulance, right, wherever they were. Air ambulance picked him up. He expired. Our EMTs brought him back. So they put him on the air ambulance. He goes to the station in hospital in El Paso. Dies three times on the table. They brought him back. And then a couple hours later, he eventually passed away. The news just said, which irritates us, is like, Guatemalan child died in Border Patrol custody. That's not true.
Right.
He was at a hospital.
Right.
He passed away.
Looks like he passed away in your care.
Right. He died in Border Patrol custody. Not true.
Mm-hmm.
Completely not true. Same thing with the little girl. Same thing that happened to her. She gets to the station, and then the dad said, hey, she's sick. Okay, boom, go to the hospital. So we bring them to the hospital. Doctors check them out. All right, before we leave, we take that person out of the hospital. There's a form called fit for travel and detention. Doctor must fill out. Is this individual fit for travel and to be in detention? Yes or no? Yeah, it's clear. Okay. They take the little boy back, or little girl, excuse me, back to the station. A couple hours later, her fever spikes again. Wow, okay, that's not cool. Take her back to the hospital. She died at the hospital. News said, another Central American child died in Border Patrol custody. Not true. Mm-hmm. It's not what happened.
She got the proper care she needed.
She got the proper... We just have EMTs, like I said.
Yeah.
Not paramedics. They're EMTs. And the definition of EMT is emergency medical technician. We can't diagnose coughs and colds, and that's not their job. So anything that they even remotely think is out of their realm,
yeah,
this person needs to go to the hospital. It's like, and even kind of frustrates us sometimes. It's like, just due to time constraints, you're like, dude, we don't have time to take this person to the hospital. And it's like, hey, I'm telling you what I think you should do. This person needs to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
All right, man. We'll take, you know, whoever to the hospital. So that's how that works.
So then the part about the sponsor, like when they show up at the border, they get a, or how does that work when they're, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, okay.
The sponsor.
They usually have some kind of piece of paper with a name, phone number, address, somebody that they know here in the United States. That person is deemed their sponsor. Mm-hmm. So when they're getting input into the system, this is the information we put in, like, this is who their sponsor is. That person is called and like, hey, we have so-and-so here from Guatemala. They said that they know you're your cousin or uncle or mom. Is that true? Yes. Okay. Are you willing to accept this individual once they're released in ICE custody and ICE releases them with a pending immigration judge court date? Yes. That's on all ICE side of the house.
Right.
So that's after they leave from our custody. That's the whole ICE thing. And I really don't know how ICE do what they do. So okay. That I can't really speak on, but yeah that's an ICE thing. Once they show their sponsor and whatever, and then ICE determines, and then ICE lets them go to that person. Yeah.
And that's where, when Republicans aren't too thrilled that they can just show up to the border and have a sponsor and then they can come into the country.
Yeah, that's true.
That's where.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, some of it is a little sketchy,
right?
You know, like, especially, okay, you got apprehended, or I don't say apprehended because they're seeking asylum or credible fear. You present yourself to us in my area, and then your court date and your court location is in Phoenix, or excuse me, in Tucson. Mm-hmm. Your sponsor where you're going is in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
Kentucky.
Yeah.
Washington State.
It's a little far from Tucson.
And you know, like, there's no way this person's going to be able to make it back to court in Tucson in 30 days.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how they come up with the whole catch and release, the term you've heard. That's basically what it means. It's okay. Like they've been caught and then they're released or whatever. They're not going to show up to court. We're operating as the law states, within the law. That's what the law says you're supposed to do. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Whether them people turn up for court or not, who knows? I mean, the same way as you and I, you're just regular U.S. citizens. You get a speeding ticket, you don't go to court. I ain't going to court for this stupid ticket. Offer, you know, what comes out is a failure to appear warrant, and, you know, you'll get stopped eventually and you'll have a warrant. So it's no different than you and I not going to court than them not going to court.
Okay. Another kind of question that'll provide some insight to what you do in your day-to-day thing is the other day, and I don't know the specifics of the story, but the surveillance van story that you told me about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind sharing that one? That one's interesting. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's going to be slightly redacted to the nature of what we were doing.
Right.
But yeah, you know, you'll have certain bad guys that things have happened, like maybe somebody was smuggling narcotics or humans. They're brought into a station and debriefed after they read their rights.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that their rights are read to, and they agree to speak or not. So, you know, you'll get information that they'll divulge, like, this is what happened, this is where I was going. You're like, okay, cool. So you get that information, and that's called actionable, workable intelligence. So, okay, we know you're supposed to pick up at this house from this person. And you'll go set up surveillance on that house, or whatever, just to kind of see what goes in and out or what's going on. So that's kind of the surveillance van story. We sat there for, I think, 9 hours. And because there was supposed to be some
narcotic coming. Right.
Right. And we sat there for 9 hours, and it never came to fruition. We were like, was this good intel or not?
Yeah. Because
we're just sitting here and sitting here and sitting
so
here.
So if it did come to fruition, if it did.
It actually did.
Oh, it did.
But let's go full circle.
Okay.
Back to what we originally started talking about. It came through the port of entry in a vehicle.
Oh. Okay.
See what I'm saying? It came through the port of entry in a vehicle. It was hidden in an air cleaner in the vehicle. 90% of narcotics are seized at the port of entry.
Yeah.
Not in the desert.
Yeah, right.
That's a perfect example. It came in a vehicle.
Okay. So if you did, like, you're parked out by this house, like you said, when you get this tip.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a chance that, like, you would have to physically bust this? Kate, like, if you're sitting there, you're obviously waiting for this to happen because you have a tip that this is.
Yeah, yeah.
So were you anticipating, like,
yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's that's a movie.
It is. It's just like movies, like TV shows. It's just law enforcement work. I mean, people think that we don't do that because it's just Border Patrol. You just ride around in this green and white truck. There's different facets to it. Like any law enforcement agency, you have your investigative side and all that stuff and prosecution side. I work on the intelligence side. It's just the same thing. We're waiting for this to happen. If it happened, obviously we're going to take the vehicle down. We're not going to let it go. So yeah, we were all prepared to do a takedown.
Get on the adrenaline pumping a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. We were ready to go.
Yeah, is there, especially in a time like now when there is so much discussion regarding the border and everything, is there a common misconception about the border and about your job that maybe gets reported, like, because kind of we talk about in the media, things, what's a common misconception then?
Common misconception is that there are just wild Mad Max running through the desert. Those days did happen. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But
I think a lot of people hear that you work at the border, that's just naturally what comes to mind is it's people crossing on foot and
yeah,
it's that's just kind of how people think.
That's how people think. And it's like, okay, yeah, that stuff does happen. It doesn't happen too much anymore because they know that the chances of getting apprehended are pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that is a misconception. And then a misconception that there's nothing out here in this because it's being force-fed that there's no physical barrier between the two countries. Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. It's all up and down the board. Now, it might not be what you think. Some areas are so remote that, first of all, getting out there and building anything like that is going to be impossible because the area is so remote and it's so far. So there are barriers. We call them Normandy barriers. They're just railroad ties that are welded together in the X's. And that's just to prevent vehicles from driving into the United States. Now, the more high traffic area, there's fencing out there now. I mean, you're talking 20, 30 feet high, paneled fencing that is out there. Now, misconception is like, this is going to stop everything. No, it's not. Because if you drive down our area that actually have fencing, you'll see a million these squares. And you're like, what are those squares? Those are where they cut holes in it and came through. And then we have to have contractors come and repair those holes. This any kind of fence, anything man-made can be defeated by man. Mm-hmm. So if you put new fencing up, bars, steel slats, whatever he calls it, it's going to get destroyed.
Yeah.
You know.
A few years ago, I saw this thing, and this is kind of a flawed argument, and a lot of people can kind of debate against this, but if you create a 30-foot wall, there's going to create a market for 31-foot ladders.
Agreed.
Which is essentially what you're saying.
Agreed.
Since you're down there.
Agreed. A few years back, that's what they used to do, was ladder over. So especially when it gets dark, you know, you'd hide in the brush, right? And we're like, hey, we're going to set up and kind of hide, and hopefully we'll get something tonight. So we're hiding in the brush, and you'll hear clank, and you knew what it was. It was a ladder.
Ladder.
Hitting the fence on the Mexican side.
Right.
We knew it was a ladder. And then so we wait and take off. Here they come. Boom, boom, boom. The dude on the Mexican side takes the ladder back down, loads it in the truck. Truck drives off. Then we go chasing the guys. So, yeah, you hear that clank. You knew it was a ladder hitting the fence.
Whoa. Yep. That's insane. Before I let you go, I want to talk about your shoe collection. Apparently, you've got quite I didn't know this. I didn't know you had a shoe collection.
Yes.
How long have you been collecting shoes?
Oh, man. Interesting story real quick how it started. In the summertime back home, there was a 3-on-3 basketball tournament in our mall parking lot.
And your home is
In Oklahoma, right?
All right.
So we'd play in 1 year. My cousin didn't have, he forgot to bring some shoes. I let him borrow a pair of shoes of mine to play in, right? So like a couple days later, I'm like, dude, I need those shoes back. And he's like, okay, I'm going to get them to you. And that night when I called him, unfortunately, he was murdered. So I wanted to get those shoes back because it was going to remind me of him. So just when I discovered eBay, I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And so I bought those shoes, and I'm like, well, what else could I find? Shoes that I wanted as a kid that parents couldn't afford, right. And I wanted in high school that we couldn't afford. And that's how it started. So we're talking about 2000, yeah. 99 or 2000 is when it started.
Oh, I thought you meant you had 2,000 pairs of shoes.
No. I was like, no, that's when it started. Because you asked when it started. Yeah, it started in like 99 or 2000. And right now, currently, I'm at 363 pairs of shoes.
Whoa. Yeah. So I was born in 98. So you have been a shoe collector for almost my entire life. That's so cool. So do you have favorite pairs of shoes?
Yes. A couple of favorite pairs that I've never worn. There's a couple of real exclusives that came out. That's highly sought after, and I got them, and I'm like, I will never wear them. It was a special box set with these two shoes, and they had gold accents because it was a special box set. And I remember one of the pair I wore for New Year's Eve. I think it was like 2002, 2003. and I took tape, and I taped the bottom of the soles. Because I'm like, well, I'm going to wear them because we're going to the casino, and it's carpeted anyway. I should have nothing to worry about. So that little box set is probably my favorite pair that I have. But
is there still one pair that you're on the hunt for?
A couple, but their price is so ridiculous. And it was like, there's Eminem joined forces with Nike and Jordan Brand to make a pair of shoes. And the Eminem, they're number 4 of Jordans. Jordan shoes are numbered 1 through, now we're up to 33.
Yeah.
It's number 4s that Eminem made, and those things on the high end, you're talking $40,000.
Holy!
I'll show you. I'll
please
I'll
show do. You. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like 40 grand.
And you're attempting. You want these?
I would love to have them, but obviously I'm not gonna pay $40,000 for a pair of shoes. But that would be a nice one. And another one is the shoes that Michael J. Fox wore in Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah.
Those shoes. They're called like the Air Magnums. And they're ungodly too. They're like $10,000, $12,000 if you can find them. But those two I love to have, but obviously it's not realistic.
Last question I've got for you, and then you can.
Sure.
I'll let you get out of here. If you had to choose an MVP right now in the game of basketball, who are you going with? I know who you're going with.
This is a rhetorical question.
Yeah, two letters.
Two letters.
PG.
Oh,
I thought you were gonna go with. I thought you were gonna go
same
with
same team.
Right, Russ.
I say RW.
Oh.
Even though Paul George had a better season,
right.
You know,
Russ is your MVP.
Paul George.
Okay.
Paul George definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
You can't deny the impact he's made from last year to this year. Paul George is unbelievable. I mean, when we first got him, I'm like, all the hype. I'm like, yeah, okay. He really didn't do anything.
Stumbled
like,
a bit.
I'm like, what was the hype about this guy?
Is this the right Paul George?
I was like, I'm like, it was just name recognition. Who is this guy? And then this year he showed us who he was. So definitely Paul George. Yeah, I go Paul George.
Awesome. Well, that's all for episode 15 of a podcast because nobody asked for it. Vernon, thank you so much for joining me.
Glad to be here, my friend. You know that.
And we'll talk to you next week.
All right.